Hello out there. Welcome back to Nocturnal Emissions Radio. I am your host, Isabella L. Price, and it's been a minute. I know. It's been a hot minute. I took some time off to kind of regroup and figure out what the second season of Nocturnal Emissions was going to be. I also launched a live show. So if you're in the Seattle area and you come down to the Northwest Film Forum, I've got a show where once a month I pick a horror movie and build a show around it. And so there was a lot of stuff going on. There was a lot of life changes that happened in the meantime, but I am back. And this episode I'm really excited for. This is actually an older episode that I recorded with my good friend John at About to Review, aka John the Reviewer. And we recorded this like a hot minute ago, but I still think that it's really good. We talk about some movies that we've seen, some new TV shows that are coming out, some horror movies and things like that, and it's a really fun episode. It's also kind of long, but I mean, it's me, so it's not like it's boring, you know. Okay, anyway, so I'm going to present that episode, and then in 2 weeks, I'll be back again with another episode. Still planning about what this season is going to be and lining up guests for you guys, and trying to do some special stuff and trying to get better equipment. So if you like this show, please subscribe. Please write a review on iTunes. That's where it is. Yeah, iTunes, Stitcher. If you just want to write a review and put it in a carrier pigeon and send it off to me, I'm sure I'll find it. Please email me. My email is nocturnalemissionsshow@gmail.com with any show ideas, if you want to be a guest, or if you have any paranormal experiences in the Pacific Northwest. You know I love to hear about that. Follow me on Twitter at NOCEMISS. And yeah, is that where all of the places I am? Please come to the live show this Thursday. We're showing The People Under the Stairs, and then next month what we're doing is Slumber Party Massacre 2, and the show's going to be outrageous. It's going to be so weird, and we are planning to come back bigger and stronger for part 2 of Nocturnal Emissions, so you really don't want to miss out. If you like horror movies at all, you do not want to miss out on this at all. So, without further ado, I present to you this next episode with me and John from About to Review. I'll see you again later. Bye.
The person that I've been talking to for a while now, this is the Getting to Know You.
Getting to Know
Isabella
You.
Price edition.
Are you going to sing it? Are you going to sing the song from The King and I?
I would, but you know, copyright.
Oh. That's right.
Notice.
Oh no.
Nobody cares. What is funny, so actually there's a tie-in with The King and I, and my favorite musical of all time, and in my top 10 movies of all time, West Side Story.
Wow.
The same woman who voiced, who basically kind of dubbed over voices.
Yeah.
Back in the kind of golden age of musicals.
Uh-huh.
She did the voice in A King and I and in West Side Story of Maria.
Really?
So Marnie Nixon, something like that.
Yeah. Sounds like a
name. Yeah. And what kind of sucks is it was not until West Side Story was wrapping up that they were like, spoiler alert, you are getting dubbed over.
Wow.
Yeah, so she did not know. Went through the whole movie without knowing. Similar to Darth Vader.
Shady.
I mean, at the same time, you know, if it was not kind of up to snuff.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know. It's kind of rude.
But yes, King and I. Good musical.
Thank you.
That is also in my top 10 favorite musicals.
Okay.
But
let's do a musicals episode.
Okay, do not. As soon as you said that, I know that one of my listeners, Lisa, is going to be sending me a tweet as soon as she listened to this, being like, "I told you." She has been wanting me to do a top 10 musical episode for like years.
Yes.
Okay, in 2019.
Yes.
I'll make it happen.
Yes.
January and February, as far as big movies go, it kind of slows down, so this would be a good time to do it.
Yes. Peer pressure.
I will make it happen.
Yes.
Top 10. Cool. I will make it happen. Isabella.
Hi.
So, Queen or Oprah of the Underworld.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, that's what people have said. You know what I mean? Certainly not something I made up about myself. It's something that other people have said about me. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They've also called me, you know, the Real Housewife of Transylvania.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, that's a good one, right? Yeah, like that. Yeah, I mean, you know, I try to do, you know, the Fresh Witch of Blair. You know, that's a good one, too.
I like that.
Yeah. I mean, they're just, you know, flying out, you know.
You know,
I mean,
that I'm stealing all of these ideas, right?
For yourself?
Yeah, and making t-shirts of them and then taking all of the money.
Man, if you could make some t-shirts, give me like 20%.
15.
Like, whoa.
I mean.
Wow. Undercutting me on my own property. Wow, the biz is tough.
Hey, you know.
Man, already.
You think podcast keeps the lights on?
I know. Just started.
Okay, so yeah. So you have this term and these, you know, obviously this passion for horror and paranormal activities and all of these types of things. So what was the first kind of movie or TV show? We already talked about X-Files, so you cannot use that.
Love it.
But what was that first either horror TV show or movie that really kind of pulled you in and you were like, this is it. Like, this connects with me.
Ooh, the real answer is so pretentious.
Oh, boy.
I know.
This is going to be some deep cut 1950s movie that nobody has heard of, which, just like when you did your panel at Emerald City Comic Con.
Yeah.
And what was the most recent one? Geek Girl Con. Okay, so she did this Women in Horror panel, which was awesome.
Thank you.
This woman across the table from me starts throwing out these deep cuts, knowing that nobody in the audience is like, oh, I remember that movie. Whatever. She's like, well, this 1960s Italian movie, blah. And it was like,
get into it. Level your game up.
Right. It was just like, it was a level of humble bragness where it was like, Oh, you guys don't know about this? Oh, well, I guess that's your fault.
I mean, like, everybody's seen this one, like, 1972, there's only one Laserdisc copy in the entire world. You know, I got a bootleg VHS of it. We've all seen it, you know? I mean, I think that horror movies, it's like a collector's thing. You know what I mean? Like, you acquire knowledge from just sort of watching a film. So it's like, it's different than most other genres where it's like, these are the agreed upon films that we're all going to watch in order to have these conversations about this.
Mm-hmm.
In horror, it's like, I have seen all four versions of this one terrible Italian zombie movies. And then other people will be like, what's that like?
Right.
Tell me, how does it feel to have that kind of arcane knowledge inside of you?
Right.
And it's very strange sort of a thing, you know, to be like, I saw the unedited version of this terrible movie, you know, and to pass that along. And it's like the unique thing about horror is that it doesn't have to be good, you know?
Yeah.
Most horror movies, they don't actually do well if they're good.
Interesting.
Yes. This is a really wild thing. Like, the higher the production value, the higher the critics score for a lot of horror movies, the lower it actually does in the box office. So you think about movies like The Nun, for example, which, if you have not seen that movie, is the worst
train wreck
movie I have ever seen in my entire life.
It was awful. I forgot about it on my worst of list of 2018. But, oh, man, it was painful to sit
through. Painful. That movie made so much money, my guy.
True.
A bajillion dollars. The movie is terrible. But another movie like Hereditary.
Right.
Which was very good, very well written, very thoughtful, did not do very well. Like, people did not like it that
Although
much.
Although it is starting to pick up, I mean, it has picked up a few awards from, like, local, I mean, I say local, like, national film critic societies.
Okay, but horror fans don't care about that.
I feel like, though, with the Oscars, like, with the Academy, with Screen Actors Guild, I think it might get a little bit of play there.
I hope so.
With screenplays, especially with Hereditary, so Hereditary and A Quiet Place, I think, are two of the horror films that might kind of like break into that mainstream award category.
Yeah. I mean, like, I did not like A Quiet Place.
Okay.
But I think Hereditary was brilliant. It was so good. Toni Collette ripped that movie apart.
Yeah.
My guy, she acted so hard in that movie. Like, she like burst her own blood vessels in that movie. It was so good.
The transition, and I've talked about this on my show before, the transition in that scene where she goes from screaming to then dead silent.
Yeah.
And it's like, and that 20 to 30 seconds.
Yeah.
She crushed it.
Where like, she's that like was screaming just... and then she pulls it back immediately, you know? And the part where she's like, oh man, the part where she's like, I didn't even want you to be born. And like, I mean, like that like hurt my feelings. Like it's, it was just, it was such a good, good movie. And I think that horror is, it's a really strange kind of a thing, you know? It's so much about it is about, it's about the experience that you have, not necessarily sort of what you're getting out of it.
Yep.
You know, the plot line doesn't really matter. The acting is sometimes real questionable, you know.
Very true.
The effects also sometimes very questionable, you know, but it's like that's not really the point. So I grew up Southern Baptist. I'm from the great state of Texas. Hey.
I mean, I thought I smelled something when you came in.
Now, that's greatness that you're smelling.
Oh, boy. Wait, what part of Texas?
I'm from this, it's a little town in the Midland, Texas, so on the flat prairie part of Texas. Tornado Alley, where tornadoes, God comes through and just wipes the earth clean, and yet the humans just keep coming back, you know what I mean?
Right.
Cockroaches. And so, yeah, I was not allowed to watch horror movies.
Okay.
I was not allowed to watch anything that was like anything bloody, anything gory, anything with boobs. I wasn't allowed to do anything. And in the 80s and the 90s, that was all horror movies were.
Every horror movie, usually in the trailer.
Yeah.
Would show some woman scantily clad coming out of a lake or a bathtub or something.
Yeah, chainsaws, machetes, everybody's getting disemboweled. Like, that was what horror movies were. And I was not allowed to watch that. But my parents are huge, like, Hitchcock fans.
Oh, okay.
Huge Roger Corman fans.
Love it.
You know? And so I would watch a lot of those kinds of films, including one Vincent Price.
Who did 800 movies.
Yes, also known as my zaddy. And so my spiritual father, which is where I get my last name from, he granted that to me in death through a seance. You know, I wasn't allowed to watch anything that was really bloody, but I did watch a lot of these like gothic kinds of things, you know.
So more of the kind of art house horror.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. More of like more heady, suggested horror.
So then what is your pretentious thing, movie that got you in that really kind of hit you the first time?
The answer is F.W. Murnau's 1921. Don't you scoff at me. I told you.
Okay, go ahead.
The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari.
Yeah. Hold on. Let me find a cricket sound effect.
Oh, my God. Am I right about the F.W. Murnau, or did he do Nosferatu? Oh, man. Now I'm confused. Either of those two.
Okay.
Nosferatu and then the Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. I hated horror movies all through high school. I was too scared. I did not like them.
Okay.
Because
it was the devil.
Yeah, it was bad. You know, it was gratuitous. You know, I was an angry little feminist baby, you know, just being like, this is like, you know, it's
exploitation.
Yeah, it's derogatory towards women and stuff like that, which I think is still a fair point because there's a lot of problematic elements in horror.
Very much so.
You know what I mean? And so I really did not like it. You know, I thought it was just mindless and gross and stuff like that. But then when I started to watch these older horror films and really break them apart, I started to understand horror for its elements, the elements of design, of sound. Horror utilizes every element of filmmaking more so than any other kind of. I mean, you can have a film that's like a historical drama that's really using a lot of natural light,
For sure.
It's not really changing anything. Sound, you could have it with natural sounds. You know what I mean? Horror, though, is a full, it's a full, all your senses are being just assaulted with horror movies, you know?
Yeah.
Lighting is utilized so well in horror movies, you know, the absence of it, the use of, the sparse use of it, sound, when sound comes in, sound triggers, things like that, you know? There's just so many different kinds of things that are happening. The design, the color design with horror films, all of those things. And I just, when I started to break down the horror film,
mm-hmm.
how it's put together to manipulate, because at the end of the day, all films are manipulative. They're all manipulating you to feel something, to experience mm-hmm. something. All films are lies. I'm sorry yep. to tell you this.
Wait, what?
But what you're seeing in that box isn't actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a recording. But yet, when you watch it, you think you're watching something real. You know, it's a manipulation of light and sound. And horror utilizes that in a way that is so unique that every time that I watch a horror movie, I get something else out of it. You know, and so when I started watching those and then going through Hitchcock, Corman, going through like Italian exploitation films, black exploitation films,
right.
Going through even all the way up to J-horror, Korean horror, mm-hmm. stuff like that. The more that I got into it, the more I was just like, I actually love this. But also, one of the things is I was allowed to watch Are You Afraid of the Dark? And that was my jam.
That
as a
was
kid.
My mom's favorite
really?
Scary movie.
Yeah.
I bought it for her on DVD when they first released on DVD in, like, I want to say the late 90s.
Yeah. You're talking about the TV show.
Oh, no. I was thinking of the movie. It was a black and white movie.
Oh, yes.
I think it was called Are You Afraid of the Dark? Yeah, where a woman is blind.
Yes.
And these kind of like criminals are in her apartment.
You're talking about the one with Audrey Hepburn.
I think so.
Yeah, I think that's what you're thinking of.
Okay.
But there was a show.
But the TV show, yes.
Do you remember in the
Nickelodeon,
90s?
Right?
Nickelodeon, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That and Goosebumps.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, and I used to sneak copies of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Right.
I used to sneak a lot of Anne Rice books when I was a kid, which was in the restricted section of the
wow.
of the town library.
Hey, at least they had it though.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, because it was sinful. Vampires and stuff, you know, sucking blood.
The devil.
It's the devil. For all the kids are going to start sucking blood and dropping right. out of school and doing dope, you know, can't have that.
All of the dope.
So yeah, like that there were these little things that kind of led me into that. And I just have an appreciation for it now. Now that I've learned how to appreciate it, how mm-hmm. to see it. And I think for a lot of people, their whole thing where they're like, you meet a lot of people who are like, I don't watch horror, you know?
Right.
More so than any other genre of movie. Like, you know, you'd never have somebody being like, I don't watch historical dramas. You know, like, who has feelings like that? Like, what are you?
I try and avoid rom-coms.
Okay.
Because they're generally just dumb and pedantic.
That's true. But you've seen some rom-coms that
yeah.
you like.
One or two.
Okay.
Maybe.
All right.
But yeah, for whatever reason, horror does have this stigma attached to
yeah.
it where if somebody says, oh, I like horror movies, immediately people are like, what?
Yeah.
As opposed to like, I like action movies. People are like, oh, well, that's not mature enough.
Yeah.
And so I find that so weird. And especially when it comes to, like we're talking about with awards and the Academy, there's this almost fear of labeling mm-hmm. your movie a horror film.
Yeah.
Because that almost nearly takes it away from awards consideration.
Right.
For a lot of the major awards. Like the Critics Societies, they love that stuff, especially mm-hmm. Seattle. Like Seattle loves horror films.
Really?
The Pacific Northwest loves horror films.
Okay.
I mean, we have a Seattle 48-Hour Horror Film Project.
Sure do.
That I'm a sponsor of and I go to every year and I cover. That does not exist in other... We also have, like, Bleeding Ham.
Yeah. There's a... What's it called? Bone Bat, which is the comedy
yeah,
festival.
Yeah.
Horror comedy festival. There's Crypticon, the horror convention.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is this kind of misunderstanding of... It's like whenever people say, like, I don't like anime, it's like, it's not that you don't like anime. It's just that, like,
you don't like the anime that you have either seen.
Yes.
Or you do not like your friend who likes anime.
Right. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. That's exactly it. It's like you just haven't found the anime that you right. like, you know? And for a lot of horror, it's like, okay, but there's so many different genres. There's so many different mm-hmm. types. And if you could just find the type of horror that you like, you know? For me, like I said, I don't like rape revenge. That's mm-hmm. the one genre that I absolutely hate. I also am not a big fan of torture porn.
Yep.
Those are the two kind of genres that I, even though I consider myself to be a fan of horror, I'm not seeking that stuff out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I love a gothic horror story. Give me something with some demon children. I love anything with some demon kids. Mm-hmm. Give me something with a haunted manor, you know, with creaky floorboards,
right.
you know, and like a wife chained in the attic, you know, stuff like that. Like there's so many different kinds of things that you can find. There's more psychological things, you know, there's more emotional things. There's just so many kinds of things that you can find. So.
Now, with all those different genres and those different ways that it makes you feel and those the way that it emotionally manipulates you.
Yeah.
Do you know of a film, a horror movie, or maybe a series, a TV series, that encapsulates the experience of horror in your mind the best?
That's a hard one. That's a hard one because, I mean, like, it comes down so much to taste, you know? And I feel like horror movie fandom, much like most fandoms, is just...
brutal.
Yeah. Yeah. People can be really not nice about it, you know, about your taste and what you like and stuff like that. So, I mean, I think, oh, man, I think that one of the best, I like a horror anthology.
Okay.
I think that you can always find something that you like in a horror anthology, because if you don't like something, just wait 15 minutes and something new will pop up, you know? And so there's a lot of really great horror anthologies. One of my favorites is Creepshow, which came out in the 80s, which is super neon pink and super bright and super, it's like all these neons.
That is the one where he becomes a plant.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yeah, okay. Stephen King.
Right.
Goofy as the day is long, he becomes, it's based off of this H.P. Lovecraft story about this plant that crash lands into Earth and just takes over everything. And it's so cool. That, or I would also recommend one of the greatest shows, which is horror adjacent, I would say, which is The Twilight Zone.
Oh, yep.
The Twilight Zone, which is...
original, or... because there was like that 90s version, I feel like.
Yeah. The 90s version, they were really trying to get that spirit back. You know what I mean? But the original Rod Sterling, I mean, he wrote every single one of those episodes himself.
Oh, he did?
Yes. Rod Sterling wrote every episode. He hosted every episode. Mm-hmm. They didn't understand how much of a genius he was at that time, you know? And so the show was so ahead of its time. You know, it had so many different messages, but a lot of it's pretty horrific. Mm-hmm. There was an episode I was just watching, which is about, it's essentially about global warming. It's the last days on Earth before, before it's too hot to live, before everyone dies out.
So next Tuesday.
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
perfect.
Yeah. And it's wild because it's like in the 50s, you know what I mean? And it's these people who are in this apartment and nothing's working. Everything is melting. The radio's melting. Jeez. Glasses are shattering. And it's just like four people in an apartment who are just like waiting out the last moments of their life. And it's terrifying, you know? I mean, movies like, TV shows like that, TV shows like the Tales from the Crypt, which is a classic 90s.
How do you fall on the, I mean, I know that you appreciate her,
sure.
Elvira.
Oh.
Now.
Mom.
Exactly. Even in the 90s, like when Tales from the Crypt was on, like, it was, I remember watching that like at a friend's house because we definitely never, like we rarely had cable.
Yeah.
We only had it in like little points here and there.
Yeah.
So I'd watch something at a friend's house. Watching Tales from the Crypt, like the story sometimes would be really scary. Mm. But then the Crypt Keeper would come in and like say a joke about boobs or something.
Yeah,
and be like, ha ha ha, and kind of forget about it.
Yes.
And then Elvira's kind of whole shtick
yeah.
was just boobs everywhere.
It sure was.
But I never really remember her show. Okay. Like, I remember her.
Yeah.
Maybe, I mean, because I was a young boy.
There's right. Something really stuck out to you, apparently. Yeah, two things.
There you go.
Right. Nailed it.
So, you know, the reason, though, is because Elvira really wasn't on TV like how we think she was on TV.
Really?
She was only syndicated really through California. Okay. And her TV show was really only syndicated, like, God, for I think maybe 4 years. Hmm. So it began really locally, California local, and then it kind of expanded. And then they would replay some episodes on TV elsewhere in little pockets all over the U.S., you know. But the genius of Elvira is her marketing instinct. Her thing was, I'm going to sell images of myself, and her branding became more popular than her TV show. Her TV show was just like, it was something to get her started, you know. But what really got her big was Elvira, Mistress of the Dark.
That was the movie, right?
Which is her movie.
Okay.
The second movie, which was Haunted Hills, I think is the name of it.
Okay.
And all of the toys and shirts and posters and cutouts and pinball machines. I mean, that was brilliant. Like such a move to make in the 90s. Like, who was thinking about that kind of stuff, you know? For her to be like, I want to sell the image of Elvira, you know, costumes, Halloween costumes, wigs, makeup lines. I mean, like, brilliant. It was brilliant. So
I mean, it makes sense. Yeah. And I guess that does, now that with that knowledge, it makes sense, like, why I do not really have memories of a show. Like, I vaguely remember Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, but I don't think I've ever seen it all the way through. Maybe just like clips here and there. Mm-hmm. But it was just, she is just, again, when we think of like 90s and she is
iconic.
Iconic.
Yeah.
But I never really understood why.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's just, she's a long person in a line of that prototype, you know?
Okay.
And so, like, it began with Charles Adams. He was the guy who created the Adams family.
Okay.
There was an unnamed character who was the matriarch of the home. She had long black hair, and she wore this tight little dress.
It was not before Morticia?
Yeah. Or? So she was unnamed for the beginning when Charles Adams was first coming out in the New Yorker. He made these little comic strips. She didn't have a name. The name came at the TV show. When the Addams Family television show came out.
It was not a TV show first.
No.
You are blowing my mind.
Give me some horror history right now.
Lay it on me.
So it was Charles Adams had a comic strip in the New York Times, and it was this little gothic family that would do these little creepy gothic things, you know?
Like the opposite of Family Circle.
Yeah, that was the whole joke, is that they would do things that were just like, just a complete 180 of the societal norms, you know? Hmm. And that was the humor of them, that they were this creepy, a subversive family.
Okay.
That got made into a television show where then everybody got names, including Morticia Adams, whose look was kind of perfected, you know. Then Vampira had a TV show, and Vampira was like this Myla Nurmi, I think is how you pronounce her name. She had these high arched eyebrows.
I was thinking of Vampirella, but Vampiri.
Vampira, yes. She was the first one who appeared on television. She had this little tiny little waist. She looked like that 24/7, long black nails, black lipstick. She had a television show for, I think, 2 years.
Okay.
Right? Then you had all these kind of offshoots. You had all these, you had Vampirella, you had all these other, that kind of, that prototype of like pale, curvy, tight waist, you know, sexy crypt kind of woman.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had Elvira, who kind of turned that into a humor thing.
Because again, similar to Crypt Keeper, it was, I remember more jokes.
Yeah.
Than being scared.
Right, because Cassandra Peters, who plays Elvira, she is a stand-up comedian. So she started as a stand-up performer. Gotcha. And so she was bringing her stand-up live performance work in as Elvira. And then that whole thing kind of spawned. I mean, and if you can imagine, like, I am not Elvira whatsoever. Like, she and I do not look the same.
Mm-hmm.
Spoiler alert for your listeners. I am very black, obviously, and curvy. And so like that, mm-hmm. the kind of pale, gaunt, thin kind of person, I never really, even though I related to her personality and her style right. and how funny she was, I never looked at her and was like, that's going to be me, you know, because right. it's just it was never going to happen. So. But I wanted to take my personality and turn that into something that made sense in that whole sort of genre. So,
gotcha. I was trying to find. I just reached over.
Yeah.
Because in the Vampirella. Yeah. In the comic books, like she was kind of that. I mean, her costume is very unpractical.
It is
just a red.
It's like a Borat situation,
yeah, pretty much. But then, like from that, then you had like. Purgatoria.
Yes. And
like, so, I mean, those
Lady
comics.
Death.
Yeah. In the 90s, it was just.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah.
They were everywhere.
Yeah. The, like, Rob Liefeld. Ugh, man, yeah. He loves that kind of stuff.
He sure does. And I have a whole stack of those that I took out specifically to give to a friend because she collects that. She is also a burlesque performer and nice. Everything. And so I have those around here in the studio somewhere. But anyway, like that. Archetype, like I had no idea that A came from a comic strip.
Yeah.
And then I mean Morticia Adams, that makes sense as like the prototype.
Mm-hmm.
And then leading up to Elvira.
Yeah.
And then I guess I mean the only person I could think of quote unquote these days would be like Dita Von Teese.
Okay.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think there's a very thick line between Vampira, Elvira, and Dita Von Teese, mm-hmm. you know, of like how they had this very like retro kind of feel to them, the kind of rockabilly kind of a feel, you know? And so I think there's a very, and that the pale face with the mm-hmm. jet black hair, you know, and this femme fatale kind of element that they all have. I think that's a very thick line between all of those people, you know, but there's really not like a major. There's so many girls on Instagram who look just like Elvira.
Well, Elvira still performs, like she is still around.
Hot woman. I mean, like she is still like boobies up to her neck. You know what
right?
I mean? Like she's still out there doing her thing. You mm-hmm. know, she was doing Knott's Farm, the haunted ride for
really?
Knott's Farm until last year. Like, yeah, she just was like, I have enough money. I'm good. So.
And she, I mean, yeah, she has had enough money for a while.
She's doing great. Yeah. Merchandising did wonders for her skin.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
The marketing side of it, that she was the brand.
Yeah.
You know, it was not necessarily her product, sort of like that image. I mean, I guess similar to almost like Betty Page.
Yeah.
Or like when you think of those iconic just images.
Right.
You see Betty Page kind of. Everywhere.
You probably imagine the drawings of Betty Page more so than you actually even imagine the real actual photographs of her.
I have seen plenty of photos of Betty Page.
Okay, we didn't need to get so personal.
Well, mainly because that was somebody where, I mean, I remember seeing pictures of her like in various things or like the sketch, like the cartoon type versions.
Yeah.
And I never really understood it until I got older and then I saw the real pictures and stuff and I was like, okay, I kind of get it. Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
That was another one where, like, I did not understand people's fascination, men's fascinations and women's fascinations for this decade, you know, decades and decades.
Mm.
Then I started watching movies that she was in.
Yeah.
It's like, when you see Marilyn Monroe in All About Eve.
Yeah.
She was only in it for, like, 10 minutes.
I know. And you're just instantly like, who is that?
She knew
exactly
what she was working with.
Yes.
She knew she could get anything she wanted, like, watching that 10 minutes All About Eve, I was like, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, I mean, when she comes in, she has like this little baby voice, you know, and she kind of like saunters in and she's so enigmatic.
Yeah.
Your eye is just following her, you know. And I was just watching a film with her and Robert Mitchum, called The River of No Return, which was this little Western movie where she's like a saloon gal, saloon mall, you know, who's like all these gangsters, Wild West gangsters want to marry her.
Mm-hmm.
But she's in love with this rough and tumble dude, you know?
Right.
And so, but like just seeing her, the way that she carried herself, she just had it, you know? And so I think that a lot of these women, these sort of prototypes, you know, people see that type and they sort of gleam into it and they go along and that type, the kind of hair, the kind of makeup, the kind of stuff, you know. And for me growing up, like the two most beautiful women that I'd ever seen in my life was Elvira. I was really obsessed with her. Mm-hmm. And RuPaul. I thought RuPaul,
amazing,
until I was of a certain age, was the most beautiful woman I'd ever seen. I'd never seen a woman so beautiful. I remember just being a kid and being like, Mom, when I grow up, I want to be RuPaul. You know, my mom just being like, okay, well, whatever you want, you can be
now, it. Because growing up in our generation,
yeah,
I did not know RuPaul was a drag queen until high school.
Yeah, same.
You know? And so did your mom even, was that...
No.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm sure she was just laughing at me. Mm-hmm. You know? I mean, like, I just thought, here's this woman who is just, she's like five women in one.
At
you know
least.
What I mean? And so she was just so tall and she was like a living doll, you know? Always hair perfect, makeup perfect, in these outfits that were just like doll clothes, you know?
Yeah.
Full.
Tailored to.
Yeah.
The nth degree.
Matching shoes with a matching purse, with a matching glove. Like everything was just, and I was fascinated with that, you know? And so that's kind of the aesthetic that I go for now is somewhere with this, what I like to say is like my aesthetic is not natural beauty, it's supernatural beauty.
Oh,
you know? So it's
crushed
like,
it. Yep.
You know, it's not sort of, I'm crafting something of my own, you know, because I'll never be thin or pale or anything like that, so I just might as well do my own thing, you know. But Elvira, I mean, ooh, and like what's also really juicy about this, the tea, is that Vampira sued Elvira.
Ooh.
Yeah, so that was the whole thing.
And then they had a knife fight.
I wish, my guy. Because like, yeah, I mean like, you know, they look so similar and she was like, and it's really funny because like Elvira was like, I didn't steal this from you. I stole this from Morticia Adams. So really
snaps.
yeah right. Yeah, and so, and yeah, that the horror hostess has a very long history, and I think, I mean, there's a lot of people who are doing it online. There's a lot of horror hostesses. They kind of all kind of look similar.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Well, so. Then I mean this ties into outside of the film things that you do. I mean, you also have been doing burlesque you know, for a while. So with that, I mean, since you do podcasting, you know, you do burlesque, you have this horror movie background. I mean, all of these things. You are a panelist at the local comic book convention.
She's tired.
But really, I mean, with all of those different things, like, which of those stages feels the most comfortable? Which is the one that really allows you to have that most creative expression, the biggest creative endeavor?
I mean, I think the least is podcasting.
Okay.
Even though I am highly opinionated. And
shocking.
Listen, hey. and I'm also, I have a great personality. I'm humorous. I'm entertaining as the days are long. You know what I mean? Like, even if I
Man,
was
it's
the,
just getting thick. And
I'm
where
just
did
saying,
this
like,
right?
You know, you got to call them like you see them.
Mm-hmm.
But podcasting is so strange sometimes, you know, so I feel really weird about that one. But I would say I love the rush of you're a performer. You know how it feels.
Oh, I was in my youth.
Wow. 40 years ago.
Right.
No, like, you know that feeling.
Yeah,
you know that
absolutely.
Feeling when you are giving the people what they want.
Mm-hmm.
There is something about that exchange, you know, of being like, I am here. When you do something and you get that response back from people, God, I mean, like, you know, it's just, it's incredible. That feeling, I really love live performance. I really like it. I really enjoy burlesque. Is a very sort of instant gratification sort of a thing, you know? I mean, like, it's amazing how excited people get for boobs.
never gets old.
Never gets old.
Never gets old.
They've seen them a million times. They're free on the internet.
What is so funny? So years ago, when I was in Vegas, we went to go see Jubilee, which is like one of those like old school Vegas shows.
Nice.
Big headdresses, all of that. And it was actually, that was the last year that they were doing it. They were retiring Jubilee. Mm. So sitting there watching this show that makes no damn sense.
Uh-huh.
Like, it, the plot just is weird.
You're not there
but,
for that.
Exactly. So they come in with these, like, big headdresses, yeah. ornate things, topless.
Yeah.
And seeing it, like, seeing this big performance number, when that show started in, like, the, I want to say, 60s
mm-hmm.
or earlier, I can absolutely see why people just lost their minds. They're like, this, am I allowed to watch this? Like, that salaciousness of
it. Oh, you were over it.
Not even over it, but, like, I understood it.
Yeah.
Like, watching it, I was like, I get it. Because it is not just you're watching a big Vegas show. You're watching a big Vegas show where people are topless.
Yeah, right?
And so, like, you know, transport yourself back 30 years even, 50 mm-hmm. years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a much bigger deal. But yeah. that instant gratification of, like, yeah.
I mean, because, like, before, it was, like, the first time you really saw a pair of boobs was, like, your wedding night. You know what I mean?
Wow.
I mean, it's true.
Yeah, back then.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, you weren't just going to see it anywhere.
Or, like, when the carnival would come through town and they would have, like, one little tent where they would have, like, maybe, like, one dancer there.
What are you talking
My dad,
about?
Actually. So my dad, like, has told me these stories, like, when...
What Dust Bowl memory
West
are
West Virginia. West Virginia.
You're just like, yo, back in my
day. Not in my day.
When the carnival come to town and...
We rode our penny farthings to the carnival.
And gather up all my nickels. Right. to the Nickelodeon. I could see a booby. Yeah.
Have you seen that, like, the ones where you, like, put your eyes in and you have, like, the little,
yeah.
like, hand crank thing?
Yeah.
But it just, I mean, yeah, from back then to now, performing burlesque in 2018,
yeah.
that happens, like, whatever, you know, a cloak comes off or mm-hmm. something, a fan, you know, yeah. unfolds. People go crazy.
They do. I think it's like a magic trick, I think, really, is most of it.
You know? I had no idea those were there.
It's like when you finally reveal, people are just like, whoa! They're just like, I knew what was under there. I was right. seeing it the whole time, but now I'm seeing it, you know? Like, I feel like people are always like, it's just their butts are blown, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just, it's a fun sort of a thing. You know, I started doing burlesque in Texas.
Wow.
Yeah. Which was great because, like, nobody strips like how they strip in Texas.
Fair. Or I would say under certain parallel.
Okay.
Like anything like yes. there's a certain parallel of
Georgia,
the country.
Mississippi, you go down, Louisiana. You go down. Some wild stuff, my guy.
The world changes.
Yeah. The stuff that you see here in Seattle is baby stuff mm-hmm. comparatively to the stuff that I have seen.
See, but then you start going, if you go down even further in the parallel,
yeah.
once you get to like the islands and yeah. then you get daggering and you're like, okay, nope, go back up.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
a little bit.
Yeah, you go too deep into Mexico, my guy.
Oh,
yeah. You're virginized. Right. You're Christianized. Right. Just, yeah. I mean, it's you. So I learned a lot of the techniques mm-hmm. there, you know. And burlesque was really a way of sort of connecting these two sides of myself. Mm-hmm. I'm an introvert kind of a person. I like my privacy, like mm-hmm. my alone time and stuff like that. But on the stage, though, I'm able to be as much of an attention whore, as much of a clown, mm-hmm. As much of a loud, obnoxious sort of person that I feel like I want to be. But like society doesn't like women that are like that. You yeah. know what I mean? Society doesn't like a woman who's like
agency.
Yeah, it's gross.
Yeah.
They hate it.
Ugh.
They dab on it.
Rip.
So, you know, like being able to be on stage and to be like the crux of it is to be like, I cannot control the way that people view me or my body in the world. I can't control what people say about me or what people think of me. I can't control the men that come up to me. I can't control what they say to me. I mm-hmm. can't control any of that stuff.
Right.
But when I'm on that stage, I call the shots.
Mm-hmm.
You look at me when I want you to look at me, how I want you to look at me. I show you what I want to show you. And when I'm done, I am done. That's mm-hmm. all you get. right? You know, and being able to go around and interact with people and be this person who's just like, you're here for the money, you know, I'm here to take your money, you right? know, stuff like that. It's a really, really great and fun thing to do that I'm just not allowed to do. And I think for a lot of women who get into burlesque, that's really what it is. It's being this person that you're not, that society tells you you're not supposed to be, you know, which is sexual and attention seeking and loud and too much and, you know, mm-hmm. outrageous and silly and stupid and girly and dumb and a bimbo or a vamp or, you know, you can be whatever the image that you want to be, mm-hmm. not what society tells you are.
And I experienced that when I was performing in Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Okay. Who were you?
So I started as just lighting technician, okay. and then transvestite, just one of the people uh-huh. in the background. Then I was lighting technician, technical director, then I was riffraff.
Yes.
And then for the last 4 years of my performing career,
uh-huh.
Dr. Frankenfurter.
Yes. full like.
Oh, yeah.
Fishnets, heels,
custom corset that I still have in my yes. closet somewhere. And it was that same thing
uh-huh.
where men and women...
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, people who were still finding themselves, because it was also in college.
Yeah.
And so you would get that introvert, you know, whoever, mm-hmm. who would come to auditions and kind of sit in the corner,
mm-hmm.
do something embarrassing, like we would always make them do, because we were like, you need to be embarrassed now in front of these 20 people in a classroom at University yeah. of Oregon.
Get it out.
Before you get on stage yeah. in front of 150 people.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you would get the introverted people, come showtime.
Yeah.
Like, it was incredible. And that was what I loved about Rocky, is that it allowed you that safe space. And again, that is a term that sometimes gets misused these days or gets overused. But burlesque, Rocky Horror, things like that. And I think theater in general
yeah.
affords you that safe space where you have be whatever you want,
yeah.
wear whatever you want,
mm-hmm.
project whatever image you want
mm-hmm.
in this space and know that you are safe, you are protected,
yeah.
you are wanted to be there, like... It is fine. And then after the show, like the collective sigh, and I know you have heard this also in the dressing room,
mm.
the collective sigh when people are taking off heels after 2 hours or peeling off fishnets.
You have no idea.
Or a corset, like that sigh
yeah.
is real.
Yes.
And I know that from personal experience. So like,
yeah.
And then, yeah, then you go to the after party and people are in their hoodies
yeah.
and sweats because it's just like, that is what they want to be in.
Right, you know, and I think that that's why I wish more men could get into burlesque, because I think yeah. that they would also really discover a lot of things about themselves, you know? I mean, it's...
I learned a lot about myself in those nearly 10 years I performed in Rocky Horror Picture Show.
You learn a lot about yourself when you're wearing high heels,
oh,
you
yeah.
know?
I had to learn how to run
yeah.
in high heels,
yeah.
Up ramps, like...
Yeah.
You know, my heels have... Have some
men,
work, have some
men
miles.
Have an easier time in high heels because of the fact that they have better calf strength.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's much easier to hold yourself up like that when you have bigger calf muscles.
I mean, not to brag, but I'm going to. one of my nicknames in the cast was Legs.
Wow. That's a humble brag.
Because I had the best legs in the cast. given, and that, again, just like Oprah of the Underworld,
yeah,
that
yeah.
was a nickname that was given to me.
Yeah.
So
that should be like your burlesque name.
Legs?
Yeah, Legs McGee.
That should be. Wow.
Yeah, have you ever thought about going back into performance?
I would love to.
Yeah?
Not necessarily for Rocky, because I think that, I mean, Barry Bostwick, who of course plays Brad in Rocky Horror Picture Show,
uh-huh.
in one of the documentaries he talks about the importance of sometimes you got to know when to hang up the heels.
Yeah.
You know, and so I might not ever do something like Rocky again,
uh-huh.
but I crave to be on the stage again.
Yeah.
Like, and it physically hurts me when I go to theater. I saw In the Heights recently uh-huh. at Seattle Rep.
Nice.
Beautiful production, beautiful musical, physically pained me that I'm no longer on stage performing.
Yeah.
Like, it hurts. But,
yeah.
you know, it is. So at some point, I'm sure I will do something. I mean, when I go to festivals,
yeah.
film festivals, and I'm able to interview people and everything, like, it gives me a little bit of that
yeah.
also. So
you gotta find yeah. it. You gotta come back. She's calling you.
The stage.
Stage is calling you. But to come full circle, though, I think that's also what I like about horror movies.
Mm.
You know, is like it's a controlled environment. You know what I mean? Like, so I have a lot of phobias. I'm like, I'm terrified of everything. And so with a horror film, it's a controlled fear. You know, I don't like roller coasters. Mm-hmm. I don't like planes. I don't like fast cars. There's a lot of things I do not like. Right.
Humans,
yuck. I just so many things. But when you're in a horror movie, it's like 90 minutes of controlled fear, heightened emotions. Mm-hmm. It's in a box. It's in this black mirror, you know, of which is controlled inside of your room, of which you get to control. Mm-hmm. You know, you can turn all the lights on. You can lock the door. You know, you have this controlling of this environment, and it's this controlled fear. And I get a lot out of that element. I mean, for me, horror movies now, they have to give me something. Since I've seen so many, mm-hmm. they have to give me something different. Yeah. I mean, like that scene in Hereditary when homegirl's head popped off. My guy, spoiler alert.
Yeah, I was like, yeah.
If you haven't seen it, you gotta see that.
And
movie.
It was something where, again, being, and again, I will not even, I mean, my horror knowledge is like, I'm close to yours. Mm. You kind of see it coming. It is a little bit telegraphed, but you still, part of you does not believe it is going to happen.
No, it's
like part of you thinks that
it comes out of nowhere. Yeah, like, you don't think that that's going to happen. You know something bad's going to happen, but you don't know that's going to happen. She's like, it's like the scene in Psycho. She's like the main character in that movie. We've been following her throughout the entire film. And so when she gets killed and it's like 2/3 of the way in the movie, you're like, okay, so... mm-hmm. Now what happens, you know? And like the way, oh my God, when I went to go see it, it was great. A girl left crying, right? Wow. Which is like the mark of a good horror film.
Absolutely. You know,
somebody leaves in hysterics. That's the best. And then there was a part where Tony's driving. Do you remember this part? And she's driving. And then she hears the in the back seat.
Yep.
Yeah. And everybody jumped. Everybody leaped. It was so good. Good horror is like, it's like a tightening of a guitar string.
Yeah.
It just gets tighter and tighter and tighter, and you know it's going to snap, but you just never know when. And if that snap gets you, you're just there. You're in that tensity. You know, you're there. You're so tightly wound. You're just waiting for the snap. You want the snap, you know. It's not something that you're dreading it because you know it's going to hurt. Mm-hmm. But also you're like, just do it. Just do it. Just give it to me. I want it so badly. I think that's why I keep coming back to horror, you know.
And that definitely makes sense. I mean, even though you sound like did not like A Quiet Place.
No.
What I liked about A Quiet Place, we talked about being emotionally manipulated. Uh-huh. Being in that theater for A Quiet Place was the most captivating audience that I have been a part of.
Yeah, fair.
Because I'm sitting next to, and I've told this story before, but a friend and fellow critic, Mike, is sitting next to me. He reached into his popcorn bag.
Yeah.
Took up a handful of popcorn and held it.
Yeah.
Like 5 inches in front of his face for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Because he did not want to be, like, A, he was captivated.
Yeah.
But B, he did not want to be that person in the theater like...
No, it's
like,
true.
But it was just like that whole theater was just on pins and needles. Yeah. And so, you know, say what you will about the movie itself, but that type of energy was unlike anything that I had experienced in a long time.
Yeah. And I will say that that was very well executed. I mm-hmm. really, really like that. There was a girl who was behind me who had like a candy bar like was just like slowly opening it.
Which makes it worse. Just the open it once.
Yeah. Just... She was just like, ugh, yeah, for like 20 minutes until this dude who was like 2 seats in front of me was like, do it, do it. You know, it's just, that was really, really great. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there were so many elements of the film that I was like, I saw this coming.
Fair.
It was really kind of predictable to me. There were so many parts where I was just like, wait, why didn't you just move near the waterfall? Why didn't you just...
We can talk here. So put a tent over there.
Yeah, move your home. Just, mm-hmm. you know, and like stuff like that. Yeah. Okay. Little things like that. I was like, why you put that baby in that box? Can you give that baby some milk?
Or live downstairs.
Yeah.
You know, in the place where you can talk and you can be all fine.
Yeah.
Why... Yeah.
Yeah. And also a mattress. That's the only thing that's covering. They just had a mattress there were parts of that movie that drove me crazy.
Fair.
Also, yeah. She just has a baby and is just like up being like, what's going on? What's popping? What's happening?
Hey, I mean, when hormone stuff, like it, the human body is an amazing machine.
That's wild, my guy. I mean, there were so many things. You could have given that baby some milk. She was.
Yeah, that was sad.
I mean, like, she was pregnant for a while. They didn't store milk? That drove me crazy. Like, it doesn't, you could tell. It was like, the whole entire time, it was like, this is written by a dude. This was written by a grown man who did not ask his wife how babies work. And so there were so many things like that that just drove me crazy. But yeah, that and, you know, I think it was, I don't know, this is kind of a weird thing, but it was weird to see a husband and wife duo. I don't know why it was so weird for me.
Oh, you mean like
me.
The real life, John Krasinski, Emily Blunt.
And his real actual
as
wife.
As husband and wife.
Yeah,
I think it worked.
Yeah?
And especially when you watch some of the behind the scenes stuff and you listen to some of the interviews, that type of chemistry that you have from being husband and wife and translating it to a working relationship.
Yeah.
I think they pulled it off really well. I think that there's a communication level and a professional level. Then it is like, hey, I know you're tired. I know you have been doing all of this. Yeah. But also, like, he talked about how, like, he was there when she actually gave birth to their kids.
Right.
And so during that scene, like, there was a familiarity to it that I think really played through. So.
Yeah, I don't know.
Granted, they were dumb and they did dumb stuff. Yes.
They did so much dumb stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know why it didn't really resonate with me. That, okay. I will always see him as Jim Halpert. And to see him as like this like grizzled macho man, you know, it's like, it's so strange. I want to laugh in his face. That's mean.
Yeah, that is.
I know, but I still want to laugh in his face, you know? It's just weird. But,
okay.
So it was a great year for horror.
Mm-hmm.
There was also this movie, not movie, this TV show called House on Haunted Hill.
House on Haunting Hill, or Haunted Hill, yeah.
Did you watch it?
I did. I saw their panel and got to see the...
Of course.
Well, yeah.
I know.
At New York Comic Con.
You met the actors, you met the director.
I did not get a chance to meet them.
You wrote some episodes.
No. But no, I saw their panel at New York Comic Con before the show came out. They showed us clips from it.
Uh-huh. Did you watch it, whole thing?
The whole thing.
Yeah.
My only issue with it was, so it was solid. It was really, really solid. This might just be my thing with horror movies.
Okay.
I do not really like happy endings.
Oh.
I feel like, I mean.
That's a hot take.
The way that The House on a Haunted Hill, and I will not go into spoilers because it is still relatively new. Came out a couple months ago.
Yeah.
So spoiler embargo is still there.
The house is haunted.
Yes.
Okay.
I don't really like the ending.
Uh-huh.
I feel like I just...
It's still a sad ending, though.
Kind of, but not really. Because, I mean, yeah, we'll talk about it off mic.
Okay.
But yes, the show itself was solid.
Yeah.
And as you know, I'm watching it, looking in the background and being
like,
there's a ghost there.
Yes.
And that they did not... focus on that.
Yes.
That it was not a gimmick. It was not,
my
look at this ghost,
guy.
And then boom, jump. Yes. It was just like, nope.
That, it messed with me so much. Because there would be, okay, I'm laying on my side, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. A total millennial, watching my Netflix in my bed, you know? And then I'm just like, I'm looking at it, and being like, what is that? What?
Mm-hmm.
Let me pause this real...
But then you pausing it makes it worse.
Yeah, and then you look and it's like, oh, that's a dead little boy that's just staring directly at me in this screen while these people are making sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
There's just like there's just a ghost that's just dead center in the middle of the frame. There was it scared me. And I watch horror movies for fun, to relax, you know, like to unwind.
No judgments, but that is weird.
I like horror movies. The thing with horror movies is a lot of them are really low. They have a really low kind of a register because it's, you know, it's about suspense. And so, you know, the sound isn't really that loud all the time. But that show the bent neck lady episode, the times when they would just cut to and there would just be hands. Mm-hmm. You could just see hands like out from underneath a table and nobody's acknowledging it, you know? That kind of stuff got to me. There was also some shots where they would do like a pan, or they mm-hmm. would do, you know, like a moving camera and like a large face. And they would just move through the rooms yep. and it would just pan over a huge face, you know, or long hair or something like that. That scared me. Yeah. Because then after that, all I was thinking about was like in the periphery, way back here in the back of your eyes, you know, is there someone standing there, mm-hmm. you know, which was terrifying. Yeah. I loved it.
Yeah. Now that it was a super solid show.
Yeah.
Definitely enjoyed it. I think the last 20 minutes were not my favorite.
Okay.
But
fair.
Overall, show's great. It ramped up tension really well.
Yeah.
Loved all the Easter eggs.
Yeah. And the guy, Mike Flanagan, I think, who directed mm-hmm. it.
Yeah.
I've never liked anything he's ever done.
Wow.
Yeah, no. He made this one movie called Oculus, which it was a bad movie.
That was pretty rough.
He makes, but.
The long take, the long shot. In episode, I want to say 6, when it is one take for like 10 minutes as it goes around the funeral parlor.
Oh, yeah.
As I'm watching that episode, I started piecing it. After like they transition from one room to the next, mm-hmm. and then they go back, and I was like, this is all one take.
Yeah.
And it kept going and kept going. Like, that was tremendous.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff like that. I don't know where, because I'm a big fan of the original book. The original...
Or the Catherine Zeta-Jones movie from the 90s.
My guy. Do not get me started. that movie, if you watch it again, it is
awful.
It gets more offensive as it gets on. It's so bad. But the original, the 1960s, The Haunting, that movie... And the book, the Shirley Jackson book, is peak gothic horror, peak psychological horror. It's so well executed, so terrifying. And I was not a fan when I heard about this TV show, because they were like, it's nothing like it. It's nothing like the book. It's nothing like the movie. Yeah, it's nothing. They rewrote everybody. They rewrote every character. They rewrote the whole entire plot. And I was the first person that was like, this is trash. I hate it. I was a hater. I was drinking my haterade.
Then you saw the first episode and you were like, sold.
I was like, I owe an apology. It was so good. That rarely ever happens because I'm always right. But I will admit, I was wrong about that show. It was great. Yeah. Yeah. Nice. 2018. I don't know if you saw that Vanity Fair article that was like 2018 is the worst year for horror.
Whatever. That was dumb.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
Oh my God. The horror community was like pitchforks ready. Mm-hmm. People were ready. Yeah. It was a great year for horror. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Well, that was 2018. Looking ahead to 2019.
Yeah.
The series that you put together with Northwest Film Forum.
Whoa, look at this tie-in.
Look at this.
What a profesh.
I do what I can.
Wow.
So Northwest Film Forum is a local theater and kind of not co-op space, but really just community space where you can have screenings there. They host film festivals there. Mm-hmm. The other thing they do is they have these series of events.
Yes.
They have these events where certain people either curate the movies themselves or they moderate them. You managed to do both. So you have an upcoming series.
Yes.
So there are going to be 4 movies from January 7th mm-hmm. to January 17th through April 18th.
Yes, sir.
So once a month, you will be showing a movie of your choice.
Yes.
And having a discussion about it and kind of talk about, maybe not discussion about it, but talk about your plans for this Nocturnal Emissions film series that you will be doing.
It's a double entendre. Do you get it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yep. Thanks. I thought of that name by myself. I was just saying. So I got 4 movies to start with, mm-hmm. right? The first one is Phantasm,
right?
Which is a bananas, bonkers, cuckoo.
So weird.
Super weird movie. It's a classic, though, horror movie, which not a lot of people have seen.
Okay.
I mean, like the I don't know if you remember the ball with the spikes on it, like that kind of stuff is iconic when it comes to horror.
Mm-hmm.
But not a lot of people have seen this movie.
Okay.
It's really indescribable. There's like a super tall dude. Yep. There's like a fly that's really big.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a ball with spikes on it. You just gotta see it, you know. The next movie that we're gonna be doing is Ganja and Hess, which I'm really excited about.
Definitely excited about that one.
That's a movie. It's a blaxploitation horror. It's a black starring, black written, black directed 1970s movie about two people who turn into vampires and their volatile relationship as they are trying to figure out. I mean, it's not vampirism in the sort of way, you know, like America's number one favorite vampire movie, A Vampire in Brooklyn, starring Eddie Murphy.
Yes.
Which is a classic.
Love that movie. We should do a commentary track on that.
It does not age well.
No. So. I bet not. We should do a commentary track
on totally.
That.
Yeah, totally. A lot of Eddie Murphy stuff doesn't age well. But it's a really thoughtful piece that was originally supposed to be kind of like a Blackula kind of a thing. It was supposed to be this really kind of like jive, turkey, funky time,
right.
Vampire stuff. And yet the director and the writer somehow managed to also do all these kinds of subplots about the feelings that black people have, the alienation between your black identity and what the world thinks you are. These two people are vampires, but they actually really don't like each other. But they're the only two bloodthirsty people that they know, so they have to rely on each other. You know, they have to kind of navigate, like, who do we kill? How do we kill? In a world that already views them as monsters, you know?
Gotcha. Okay.
So how do you live like that? Mm-hmm. You know, it's really great. I can't wait. It's really hard to find, so not a lot of people have seen this as well.
Okay.
The next one that we've got is People Under the Stairs.
Uh huh.
What is this?
So this is I have feelings about this movie.
Yeah.
I remember the trailers. I remember the commercials for this. It looked terrifying.
Yeah.
It made me, without even seeing it, it made me scared to go down and up the stairs of my parents' house and under the stairs.
Crawl spaces or no.
Right. And then I saw the movie. I have no idea why I thought it was scary.
I mean, you saw it recently as an adult or you saw it when you were a kid?
I think I saw parts of it when I was a kid, but the last time I remember watching the full thing was as an adult a couple years ago. And like we talked about, it has that kind of Crypt Keeper level of like, it was almost more a comedy than a horror. Yeah. Like, scary stuff happens, but watching it as an adult, I was like, watching the trailer, it makes you think this is a horror movie. And it was like, it really is not. Like, so I'm interested to see kind of what kind of happened, like, with this screening.
Yeah.
Now, are you going to be doing, like, not necessarily Q&A, but any sort of, like, discussions? Are you going to have some talks about these?
I mean, yes and no.
Okay.
I mean, most of it's going to be life performance burlesque, trivia,
nice.
Those kinds of things, prizes and stuff like that. But for Ganja and Hess, I really do want to bring in somebody to talk to you about this because I think that is, it's a different kind of movie.
Absolutely.
It's not like the other three are kind of like, they're each kind of movies that you can just like go and have fun with, you know, but Ganja and Hess has a little bit more subtext to it. And so I kind of want to go deeper into that. But yeah, no, it's not an academic kind of a thing.
Okay.
I mean, like we're beginning with boobies and we're ending with blood and guts. And so it's a fun kind of a night out.
Speaking of ending, what is the final film?
The final film is a classic Criterion Collection snubbed.
Yep. I was going to say, wait, I was waiting for something.
This movie called Slumber Party Massacre.
Two.
Okay, wait a second. So let me go back to The People Under the Stairs.
Okay.
The People Under the Stairs was Get Out before Get Out was Get Out.
Yes.
That's a hot take. You better take that hot take. You better put on some gloves, my guy.
Oh, wow.
That is, yes, it was the first movie that was like, don't go into white people's houses.
Okay, well, that much, yes.
they got some weird stuff in their basement. You get out of there. And as like a little black kid, mm-hmm. like the number one fear was like a weird kooky white person's basement. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And so I think that movie was really, it was really scary to me as a kid.
Gotcha.
It's Wes Craven, mm-hmm. Which is really interesting. And I think that in a post Get Out world, it has resonance.
Hmm.
So I want you to look at it with your Jordan Peele cleansed eyes. Oof. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a classic bop.
Okay.
Yeah. Stay out of white people's basements.
Well, fair.
Okay.
Fair.
And then Slumber Party Massacre 2, which, you know, I know that people are going to be like, what happened to Slumber Party Massacre 1? Mm-hmm. Okay. It's not even worth talking about.
Or 3.
Right. Slumber Party Massacre 2 is both the prequel and the sequel to Slumber Party Massacre 2. Okay. Do you understand what I'm
AKA
trying to say?
AKA a mess.
It's the best movie that you've ever seen about a bunch of teenagers being killed with a drill.
Okay. And where is that drill located?
At the end of a guitar.
There it is. Yep. Exactly.
And you're going to be asking yourself while you're watching this. First of all, what we're doing is we're having a slumber party to go along with Slumber Party Massacre. Okay. Right?
Pajamas are welcome.
Pajamas are welcome. Bring your onesies. Bring your favorite, you know, your stuffy. Do you remember stuffies?
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Where it was like, it was a stuffed animal, then you turn it inside, it was a pillow. I wanted one of those so badly.
Well, and then the newer versions is Pillow Pet.
Yes, a Pillow Pet.
It's bring pillow. It's a pet. It's Pillow Pet. I have nieces and nephews.
Yes, and, to these vocals, Mariah yeah. Who?
Right. Well, and then we had Popples also.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. So bring your Popples.
Right.
And yeah, so we're going to be doing that. Someone may die. Who knows?
Mm,
you know,
fair.
It's like, you know, we're just going to leave the night open.
Mm-hmm.
The movie was one of the first movies to be written and directed all by women.
Really?
It's a predominantly female
Did
crew.
Did not know that.
To predominantly female actresses.
Well, yeah.
And so it's a really kind of like proto, this woman who is like, I'm going to play with this genre. I'm going to mm-hmm. play with the slasher genre. It's not, I wouldn't describe it as like, oh, this was like a proto feminist. What's feminist about it is that this woman was like, I'm going to do this on my own mm-hmm. terms.
Yeah.
You know, that's the feminist idea of it. It's still a bunch of like horny teenagers being
right.
killed with a drill.
Don't go all the way.
It's so, and they're like totally like, oh, we're going to have so much fun here at your dad's condo.
Right.
You know, like, and it's just, it's ridiculous. Like, there's a part where they all lose their tops for no reason.
Well, and like the pervy guys being like, I didn't know girls actually did this.
Yeah. Where he's like in the window.
Fight.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Whoa, boobs. You know.
Boner alert.
Yeah. Stuff like that. The movie is amazing. And like, your life will be changed. You'll be like, how did I ever live without seeing this film?
Okay.
So those are the first four entries.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to keep some surprises for each of the screenings. You know
okay.
what I mean? Have some people show up, some surprise performances, stuff like that. Some surprise prizes. Surprise prizes.
Surprise prizes.
All prizes are okay. you know, stuff like that. It's not going to be different than my panels, which are usually very academic.
Mm-hmm.
This is not academic. You might actually go and leave stupider than you came in. Hopefully.
I think after Slumber Party Massacre 2.
Yeah.
Oof.
A classic. TCM is calling.
Mm.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, it's so, oh my God, I love this movie so much.
Okay.
Yeah.
So those are going to be once a month.
Yeah, third Thursday of the month.
Okay, and I definitely will put the link to that in the show notes so people
Bless.
Can click through.
Yeah.
Please
come see this because I'm so broke. Like, the more tickets I sell, the mm-hmm. more money I get to walk away
hey.
With. You know how expensive rhinestones are, my guy? Your expensive tassels are?
I have some of both of those, I think,
I mean,
in a box somewhere.
Okay, you gotta spread that wealth. Okay?
Like, if I open a certain box that I have in my closet with all my costume stuff, just
yes.
glitter.
Yeah, just explodes. Everywhere. Just yeah. I mean, it's really expensive to be a stripper. Nobody talks about it. There's just not enough like funds, you know what I mean? United Strippers mm-hmm. of America. You know? I mean, like, you can't be out here walking these streets. Well, you can't actually.
No, how's it go to 99 and like 1/40th, you know?
I mean, it's tough, but it's going to be fun because, you know, people in Seattle, right? I'm not going to say we because I don't consider myself to be a Seattleite. You know what I mean? But people in Seattle, I think, they have a distance, you know? They want to go inside. They want to brew their kombuchas and their IPAs. Ugh. You know what I mean? They want to be left alone to live in peace, you know?
Right.
But I'm trying to pull people out. I'm trying to pull people out. I'm trying to pull you down into the grave, trying to pull you down into the depths of hell because it's nice here. We have cookies, you know? I'm trying to, it's we're all chilling. We're all hanging out, me and Satan, you know? And we're just having a great time. And I want to get people out into the open, hanging out with each other, being stupid, having a good time, watching dumb movies. Watching people be murdered.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Relaxing, calming.
And I definitely think that with the films that you have chosen for this first series, people are going to have fun.
I hope so.
It is just, again, laughing at the absurdity of movies that at one point people thought were terrifying.
Yeah.
Watching them now and being like, okay, wow.
That's the thing, nice. You know, is like horror is something that you constantly have to re-examine, you know what I mean? Because mostly, well, no, actually, I take that back because I was going to say like mostly movies stay the same, like movies that are romantic stay the same. That's not really true. There's some movies that you see that were real romantic before and you're like, wow, that's a crime.
Yeah.
That's a crime now. You would go to jail now.
Some of those like black and white movies where the man just like grabs her neck.
Yeah.
It's like shit and they're just like match each other's face. And you're like, ugh.
I'm like, my guy. Like, is there mace around?
Right.
Yeah. Oh my God. Have you watched You on Netflix?
No.
Oh my God. Have you heard of it?
Yes.
It's a Lifetime channel.
Ugh. You already lost me.
Don't. No. Come on.
No.
You know what I mean? It's like, it is a prototype Lifetime channel. It's like, you know, like a white girl. She's in the city. Mm-hmm. She's alone. Oh, she finds the man of her dreams.
Gets assaulted.
But he's not who she thinks he is.
Of course.
He's a psycho. And it's Pim Badgley, Gossip Girl herself. And he is stalking her, but it's from his perspective, right? And so, like, he's like, I'm doing this because I love you. And people are, like, full on falling for it. The TV show gives me an ulcer. I have heartburn now. I have agita. I have sciatica. Okay. My vision's blurry. The show has ruined my life. I've never known peace since I've seen this show. It is so, I don't know. I just wanted to tell you about it.
Okay.
Watch this show. It'll ruin your life. It's the worst TV show.
Just what I was looking for.
I can't wait for season two, my guy.
Wow.
Yeah. But the show's going to be so much fun. And if the four shows are successful, we have a super long list of other movies that we want to bring to people, you know, and I think that people will love, I want to tell people, you know, like, you're going to want to come to these first four shows because you're going to want to see these other movies that we want to show.
Yeah.
You know, and there's nothing really like it in Seattle.
True.
You know, there's nothing really where it's like, come see a movie hosted by a delicious, velvety, caramel, angel-voiced, demon-faced woman of your nightmares. And see a crazy movie and maybe walk away with a prize, some cool swag that you know, maybe answer some trivia, maybe get stabbed. I don't know. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a grab bag. You know what I mean? So I think that it's something that, people really aren't used to in Seattle. And I want to bring that, you know, to Seattle. Seattle needs it. Liven up.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
And then where can people find you on social media? Where can they follow up with Northwest Film Forum to get the most information? Of course, I will put the link to Northwest Film Forum in the show notes. Bea, where can people find you on the social medias?
If you're a man of a certain age, maybe you are very sick and also very rich, you can look me up. I'm on Tinder. I'm on OkCupid. I'm on Grindr for funsies.
Okay.
I'm on LinkedIn. You know what I mean? Like, if you are so close to death,
And have millions of dollars.
Yeah, and you're just looking for some place to put it, hit me up. Hit your girl up. You can also find me at isabellalprice.com, which is my horror blog where I write about horror movies and where I update on where I'm at and my panels and my live shows and stuff like that. You can also hit me up on Twitter at NOCEMISS, knock and miss. Nocturnal Emissions was too long for Twitter, apparently. So it's at knock and miss. Please hit me up. I would love to hear, especially like if anybody has true real life hauntings or ghost stories. Mm-hmm. If you've seen a Bigfoot, if you were going to the Safeway and it was 3 a.m. and you swear to God you saw an alien, I believe it, especially in Fremont. I've seen some wild stuff there.
Center of the universe.
I mean, my guy. If you've seen a Squatch, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Tell me, I want to hear about it. I love that kind of stuff. The Pacific Northwest is like a liminal space.
Yeah.
You can find me there. You can find Nocturnal Emissions Show on Facebook, Isabella L. Price on Facebook. And yeah, you can slide into my DMs, Isabella L. Price, Instagram, DMs wide open. Just,
boom.
Just lube yourself up and just slip right on it.
Wow. There
especially
it is.
Especially if you're old and rich, Jeff Bezos. Hi.
Right. Nice. And then this podcast, for the About to Review podcast, you can find it on all forms of social media at About to Review, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube.com/About to Review. Full links to the show notes and guests like Isabella Price and all of her work is going to be in the show notes on AboutToReview.com. There's also a support tab on the website AboutToReview.com. So if you want to do a direct PayPal donation, that would be great. Keeps the lights on in the studio. There's also an Amazon wish list.
Yeah. If you're an elderly man who wants to sponsor.
Yep. Who has spot in their will open.
John's open to sugar daddies.
So at least for the podcast, just like, hey, I need to keep these lights on.
In this economy? So, come on.
Right. Got to make it happen. New episodes are out every week of the About to Review podcast, here to amplify diverse voices in media. On this week's episode, I have been joined by a friend and podcaster and filmmaker and burlesque dancer and Oprah of the underworld herself, Isabella Price.
Well, from the bottom of my heart, I can say, you're welcome.
Humble to the very end. So thank you so much, Izzy.
Yes, it's been your pleasure.
Indeed it has, and the listeners. So thank you, everybody, for listening. We will see you next time.
Bye.